This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
Daniel Petrie is a former Microsoft executive who worked in Seattle with Bill Gates. He's run Microsoft in Australia, and today he's a founding partner in Airtree, a venture capital firm. In 2016, the Australian Financial Review named Petrie and his partner Craig Blair as the most powerful players in the Australian technology investment space. However, he's also passionate about getting the work-life balance right, or as good as it can be. Daniel is a guest speaker at a Pathfinders Business Breakfast on November 10. We're fortunate enough to be able to pick his brain today. Hi, Daniel.
Hey, Katrina.
Thanks for your time.
Pleasure.
Your corporate success has put you in a real position of influence. What's your priority in how you use that influence, Daniel?
Good question. So I think my success has allowed me or provided me the opportunity to think about life more broadly. And I actually think the most important thing I can do is help people think about how to live a fulfilled and happy life, of which work is an important part, but is not the only part.
Okay.
And I think that's the most important thing I can do. I mean, I get, you know, obviously I work a lot with startups and how you focus on business plans and how you build good businesses. But at the end of the day, I think the most important thing that I can do is try and help people think about how to live a fulfilled and happy life.
You've sort of, for a while there, I guess because with your book, become a spokesperson for balancing family and work life. Were they lessons that you learned at Microsoft, or how did you become so passionate about that?
Look, I mean, the story sort of goes, I was at Microsoft, I was promoted young to run Australia, I was then promoted to the US. I was doing very well, vice president, about to be made a senior vice president, only non-American vice president of the company. And then my sister was killed in a car accident. Well, two things happened. The first thing, my sister was killed in a car accident. And she was the most beautiful person. And you can imagine, everyone says that when people die, right? But in this case, it was factually correct.
Yeah.
She was just the most wonderful person, just the most giving, caring person. And she had a car accident. It was terrible, terrible. And my brother-in-law rang me. We came home for the funeral, which was just terrible because I was in Seattle at the time, as I mentioned. And I was back at work, and he rang me and said, we need to decide what we put on Gabriella's tombstone. And we, you know, thought for a while, a few days, worked out some beautiful words to put on her tombstone. But then it occurred to me, what would people put on my tombstone if I was to drop dead? And what had occurred to me was that I didn't want it to just say that he was, you know, a very successful technology executive, that I desperately wanted it to say that he was successful at work, but he was a great father, he was a great spouse, he was a wonderful friend, he gave back to the community. And so through her death, it woke me up to, A, there's more to life, and there are actually more important things in life than just work, and you can, if you're prepared to make sacrifices, you can try to do well at more than just one thing in your life. You can try to be successful at work, but also try to be a really good dad and a really good spouse and a good friend and a good member of the community.
And how do, you know, corporate employers and employees respond to that message? Do you think that the culture is changing?
Look, it's definitely changed from when I first wrote Father Time, you know, sort of more than 20 years ago, it's changing. But I think the constant is employees, it resonates with them. They want to have more time back. They want to be able to be good parents. The majority of people do not want to be bad parents or bad friends. But the majority of the leaders of our businesses are, in fact, bad parents and bad friends. By that I mean they focus too much of their time on work, and they then expect everyone else to follow suit. So they're terrible role models. This is as consistent as it was 20 years ago, but it's still relatively consistent. These are people who have long ago given up relationships, loving relationships, and have traded money and power for relationships, and often don't even know they've done that, but they have, and then they expect everyone else to behave accordingly. So you get a disproportionate reaction between how employees will take that message from me, which is, yeah, we agree, how do we do that? And CEOs who see me as inappropriate to use this term on your show, perhaps, but the devil incarnate, that I am this evil person trying to disrupt the successful work environment.
I guess it's a confronting message for people who have given their life literally to their company.
Well, that's right. And the reality is, whether you make it a conscious decision or not, you know, you're making a decision in the sense that by behaving in a certain way, you're making a decision on what's more important in your life. The thing I find hilarious is people will say, oh, well, you know, Barry, you know, worked, you know, as a corporate partner in a law firm for 30 years and spent 14 hours a day at work and traveled a lot. And he has just as good a relationship with his children as Harry over here, who also worked hard as a lawyer, but he tried to be home for dinner three nights a week, and he tried to take kids to sport on the weekend, and he took, you know, took family holidays. It's just not true.
Mm. Yeah.
It's not true. And that's fine. I'm not trying to be judgmental, but don't pretend that one set of decisions does not impact another part of your life, because it actually does.
Yeah, wow. It's great to hear you speaking so frankly, Daniel. I'm talking to Daniel Petrie. He is a venture capitalist and a former Microsoft executive. He's a keynote speaker at a Pathfinders breakfast coming up on November 10. Now, speaking of talking frankly, Daniel, I hope you don't mind me asking about this, but sure. Just a few months ago, you spoke out about the culture of sexual harassment in the venture capital industry. Has anything changed since then? Has there been any backlash or any follow-on from what you said?
Well, the problem, in the way for your listeners, is that, you know, venture capitalists, what we have is we have, you know, a pile of money from our investors who expect a return. And then on the other side of the transaction, if you will, you have a number, lots of small startups desperate for investment. And that is if misused, is a power relationship that's very, very unhealthy.
Okay.
And so it is your responsibility as a venture capitalist to, regardless of, we'll get the sexual harassment in a moment, to make sure you're treating that relationship on the fairest and most honest and respectful basis. And generally speaking, some VC firms do not, and people do not take that position of power and use it appallingly. Forget sexual harassment just in terms of bullying and harassment. But there are many cases in the US that have come to light where men have used that power to sexually harass startup founders. And, you know, as a father of three young women who are outstanding young women, and a person who has hated the idea of bullying or harassment in any form for his whole life, I just find it appalling that people would use that. And so I just wanted to make the comment that, you know...
This sound is processed by StereoTool. Go to StereoTool.com.
Any relationship, and that we need to make sure that the Australian venture community does not follow the path of the US venture community, where you have this series of assault claims coming out on a regular basis.
So, Daniel, you know, you're right at the heart of Australian business. What do you think are the big opportunities in business in Australia right now?
The big opportunity is that Australian businesses need to transform themselves to meet the changing technological landscape. And by that I mean technology is changing at a much faster rate than ever in the past. And there's a double-edged sword. There's an opportunity and a threat for us to take advantage of the technological shifts and things that like artificial intelligence and machine learning and advanced robotics and what's going on, and create successful Australian businesses that can hire lots of people and pay a lot of tax and create a healthier society. And the negative is, if they don't, then we're in a bit of trouble. And the problem for Australia is that we are historically a country of oligopolies, of, you know, like take banking, you know, four major banks for 100 million years since prehistoric times.
Yeah.
and generally speaking, those environments, the oligopolies, are not very creative. They're not really world best. And so we need to transform this sort of slow-moving, monopolistic kind of environment, or oligopolistic environment, to one of high innovation. And there are fruits of that labour, which is a healthier economy, which I think hires more people, pays them more money, pays more taxes. So it's a great opportunity. But we do have a lot of companies run by old white men, you know, who like things the old way.
Yeah.
And this requires new thinking and more innovative thinking and more energy. And there are spoils there if we're prepared to take that leap.
Aren't we sort of in danger, though, of moving into an era of actual just monopolies? Like, people seem to be a little bit worried about what's going to happen with Amazon launching in Australia next year. What do you think the impact of that will be?
Look, I think Amazon will be impactful. I mean, first, you go back to the US, where Amazon is, you know, the significant player. I think Amazon makes up about 15% of total retail in the US. So it's big, but it's not everything.
Okay.
Now, I think Amazon will be bigger in Australia than the US because our Australian retailers provide a significantly worse offering than their US counterparts.
Mm-hmm.
So Australian retail will be in for a big shake-up. Now, I don't think, however, that Amazon will destroy retail. What it will do is force retailers to create significantly better opportunities and options for their customers. I do think it will cause havoc with department stores, because historically department stores haven't added much value. They sell someone else's product in not much of a range, which is not very helpful. So I do think, if you're a small supplier of very good products in Australia, then the Amazon platform will be incredibly valuable to you.
Mm.
So I think what it comes down to, it's a good example of forcing people to be very focused on, are you best in the world at what you do? If you're not, you're in trouble.
Okay.
If you are, then you're good. You're okay. So now there are, is Google too dominant or Facebook? And there are legitimate questions around some of the other platforms that are taking positions. But I think there is an issue where we need to assume certain things will happen. Then what can we do as a country to utilize platforms or work with them or work around them if we have to ensure our country's sort of growth?
Mm, okay. Well, it's been great talking with you, Daniel. I will let you go. I just wanted to ask you, though, as a person who has the ability to make a lot of money, what's your attitude to personal wealth?
I think if you've been lucky in life and you've ended up with more in your pocket than someone else has, I think you have to give back, and you have to give back to a point that it hurts. For our own reasons, my wife and I took a significant chunk of our net worth to the point that it hurts. It stops us doing some things. I mean, we still have a nice house and we, have nice holidays and what have you, but it hurts in the sense that it stops us doing some things. And that has now gone into our foundation. Over the last years, we've given more than $20 million away to a range of causes. And we do that because we think it's the right thing to do. We don't think we're necessarily good people. I'm not a great person. But I think that's what you do. That's just what you do. And if you end up with more in your pocket, I've not worked any harder than anyone else. Any teacher in a tough school in Western Sydney, or a cardiothoracic surgeon at St. Vincent's in the city, or a guy, making the new WestConnex road system. I've not worked any harder than any of those people. I've just been luckier. And so I have to give some back. And that's the thing I do find frustrating in Australia, is that for whatever reasons, giving in America by the wealthy is seen as a requirement. It's seen as if you want to be respected in America in business, you have to give back. In Australia, you don't have to give back, and I think that's appalling. I think Australia's giving rate by our wealthy, although better over the last 10 years, is still appallingly low. And I don't understand how people can accumulate large amounts of wealth well beyond what they could ever spend in their lives, and not feel any pang of responsibility for those who've not been as fortunate in life. So for me, it's a binary thing. It's not do you want to or do you like it. You have to. If you've got more money than someone else because of luck or hard work and luck, then you have to give back.
Well, it's great to hear from you, Daniel. Very refreshing attitude.
Okay.
So, yeah, I've loved talking to you. Appreciate your time. I've been speaking with Daniel Petrie. He's the keynote speaker at the Pathfinders Breakfast on November 10 at the West Inn in Martin Place. To find out more, visit pathfinders.org.au.
Thanks for listening. Start your day with Life Words. Subscribe to Hope 1032's free daily email devotional at hope1032.com.au.